Behold, a podcast for the ages. Recorded live from the interdimensional terror vortex of their subterranean dwellings comes the Rough House Podcast version 3.0. Two galactic warriors put down their warhammers and battle axes to perform a more noble task. Complaining about professional wrestling on internet-purchased microphones.
Now with more Simpsons references and Kota Ibushi thirst.
This is the Rough House Podcast with Marty and Christoph.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Rough House Podcast, episode number 361 for recording date March 10, 2024. Hello, I am Marty.
I'm great. Oh, boy.
Oh, boy.
Oh, excuse me about that. Hey, I'm Christoph. And
you just died a little bit right there.
I mean, you know, we're all dying.
Yeah.
Happy Mario Day to you, my friend.
It is Mario Day. Yeah. It is.
It's a Sunday. apologies for missing last week. I was whisked away to the wonderful world of Wilmington, North Carolina.
Yeah.
Which I guess might be slightly more exciting than Wilmington, Delaware.
I'm pretty sure.
Really not much going on there. But to note my dedication to the product and this show and being prepared, I did spend the entire evening in my Holiday Inn Express hotel room in Wilmington, North Carolina, watching AEW Revolution on my cell phone, because that's the only way I could get it to play.
The way the Lord intended, watching it on the cell phone. And we're going to be talking a lot about that. In fact, we have a lot to cover specifically related to AEW. So since we're a wrestling podcast, we are legally required to do this.
The World Wrestling Podcast.
They just put together the tag match for night one of WrestleMania on Friday. Anyway, let's continue on into AEW this week. It was a very big week for AEW.
You're my favorite.
you're welcome, my friend. Very big week for AEW. As we said farewell to an icon, to a true legend, to something that's going to reverberate for years and years and years.
Darby it's going to be a long day. Allen.
No.
Legend Darby Allen.
I'm not talking about him. I'm talking, of course, about the original AEW theme.
We're no more lighting the fuse.
We are not. This. All right. It is done. No more fuse bringing. No more fuse being brought. It's a new era of AEW Dynamite.
Had a good run. The fuse.
It very much did. New stage, which looks awesome. Mm-hmm. New graphics on screen. It also looks like they're simplifying the AEW logo to just be the AEW block letters and that sort of thing. But we have a new Mikey Ruckus theme, and here's how that sounds.
I mean, I don't know. I'm sure over time it'll grow. I feel like Tony was like, all right, give me something like Across the Nation.
Yes. You know, 1000%. It has that early 2010s raw feel.
Yeah.
Like it very much is like aughts to early 2010s, whether it's Across the Nation or
Burn It to the Ground, the Nickelback song.
It does have a lot of that same feel, that same vibe as Burn It to the Ground. I don't dislike it, but
it was jarring.
Yes. I've grown to love, and it's why it became the drop for going into AEW. I really grew to love the Dynamite theme, especially the instrumental version.
Yeah.
So this change is a lot for me personally.
Is there anything I can do to help you in these trying times?
I know, right? But like the graphics sort of going back to like the color explosions and all of that. I'm all for that, because I thought that aesthetic really stood out.
Sure.
And it made them feel unique. The changeover that they did, I think that was beginning of 23, where it was like, you know, the blue and red graphics and all that. Like, that felt a little generic to me.
Yeah.
But I like this. I like how, like, there's like a reflection on the ramp that almost makes it look like, you know, the the heel and face tunnels, which are back, like they're bigger than they are because of the way it reflects and all that. Like I do like a lot of this new setup. It's just, it's going to take a little bit to get used to.
Sure. Yeah. No, same. You know, I'm sure, like I said, over time I'll be, you know, pumping my fists in the air to whatever Mikey Ruckus brought us. He's the one doing the vocals on these things, right?
He is. Yes. Yes. For the most part, like sometimes he, you know, obviously Rampage wasn't him,
right.
You know, it was some other rapper, and sometimes, you know, he brings others in to do vocals for different themes. I will say we are getting a little samey in terms of Mikey Ruckus vocals on something.
Yeah.
So I hope we continue to spice it up a little bit with different things. But yeah, we'll see how it feels in 6 months.
Yeah.
Right now it is a little jarring. I will say listening to it just now, I liked it more than I liked it on Wednesday.
Well, yeah, because it was unexpected. I mean, right. I guess you might have thought something might change, but not a full-on new theme.
They put a video out, or I think it was Will Washington who did it, who's one of the creative folks at AEW, put a video of like a montage of all the intros, and it was very much like, oh, okay, they're probably going to change the theme entirely now.
Yeah.
So hell of a run for the original Dynamite theme. And we'll see how this sticks with us. But before we started the new era, we ended a prior one. That was this past Sunday, a week ago today. It was a jam-packed crowd at the Greensboro Coliseum for AEW Revolution, headlined by the retirement of Sting. I may be so bold to say this.
Okay.
This may be one of the best wrestling events I've ever watched, full stop.
Okay.
Not just in AEW, but across the board.
Wow.
I will say there was a match or two that didn't work out that great.
Sure.
But the quality of the rest of the show was unbelievable.
Work rate through the roof.
Yes. And it definitely has what is my match of the year right now, if not one of my favorite matches I've ever seen.
Boy.
It did kick off with Zero Hour, and Zero Hour was started with the I guess it was a 12-man tag
Bang Scissor Gang.
Yep, Bang Bang Scissor Gang against Private Party, Willie Mack, and these assholes.
I'm happy to see Willie Mack get on a pay-per-view show pre-show.
Yeah, still a pay-per-view, right?
Yeah. Get booked at a pay-per-view.
Love right. That. This was just sort of a house show, baby faces go over,
sure,
party tag. Nothing really special. What I thought was kind of funny, though, was after the match, Jay White gets the mic, and I don't think he was given any, like, instruction for what to say. And it felt like there maybe was a producer, because they have the producers by ringside, just going, stretch it out. Because
yeah.
He was just like hitting every single, you know, I'm a baby face saying thank you to the crowd trope. It was very weird. It was very, very weird.
Yeah, I didn't have this queued up. I wasn't paying too much attention to it because I was also scrolling through Grubhub trying to decide what to order to my hotel room for dinner that night.
Yeah.
And I was very hungry because there was a lot of travel that day and I didn't get a chance to really eat anything in my layover aside from a bag of beef jerky at the Atlanta airport. So yeah, that was taking precedence over whatever Jay White was mumbling off.
Yeah.
I settled on Indian food, by the way, in case people out there were wondering. And it was very mid.
North Carolina, not really known.
I know. I didn't think about that. I was just like, oh, this sounds good. I could eat this right now.
When I hear Carolina, I just assume vinegar-based barbecue. Like,
and I'm usually okay with that. But surprisingly, where I was, there wasn't a lot of options with that.
Mm, okay.
Just like at a bar, you know, like a bar that does Grubhub or DoorDash or something would do delivery. I was like, I don't know about that. Yeah. So
we had a vignette for Pac, who said he was coming back. Said Tony Khan will never get rid of him. And he said he will take this, quote, festering scrotum of a company into a new age.
A poet is back. Was he wearing clothes in this promo? Did I remember that correctly?
He had a shirt and a beanie on.
Yeah, it was very off-putting.
Yeah, the kayfabe's broken. He doesn't just wander around in his gear at all times.
I still think he does.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, it's a fair assumption. He's a weird gremlin man.
Looking very angry, as per usual.
But I was very, very excited to see him pop up. We had Chris Statlander and Willow Nightingale go against Julia Hart and Sky Blue as they continue the whole Chris and Willow and Stokely Hathaway storyline. Stoke was on commentary for this. Very fun as always. I think as much as people have talked up Julia Hart improving, rightfully so, because she went from not really being anything at all to legitimately being a star in that division, which is crazy.
I mean, it was more booking than performance, I think.
Fair.
In-ring performance. Character-wise, outside of the ring, to her credit, you know, she does the resting bitch face pretty well with the spooky hat. But
I can't remember if it was, I think it was on Dynamite. She cut a promo and someone needs to tell her to figure out a promo voice. Because that, like, vaguely Georgian draw, not really going to work.
You're not a fan of the Georgian accent, I've come to notice.
Well, it's not so much against it in totality. It's just in this instance in particular, it's like you're supposed to be all spooky and everything.
Right.
Having a bit of a twang ain't really getting it done.
Yeah, you also gave Anna Jay shit for it, too, so.
Yeah, but she sounds like she has a learning disability when she gets a promo, so.
Queen Slayers don't need to know how to read.
But what I was saying is, for as much as Julia has improved, I think Sky Blue's right there. I think she's really coming into her own recently.
I will admit, I pay a little more attention when Sky Blue is on the screen. I can't put my finger on it. Not sure why, but something about, just draws my eyes to the screen when she's there. Honestly, I hate saying this. I really could not give a fuck about this Willow Stat Stokely thing. It's just, I don't know. It hasn't drawn me in, and you know, the spooky Julia thing hasn't drawn me in. So needless to say, I was not
really
fawning over my screen. I think I was still deciding what to order at this point too, which was not helping. When you're hungry and you want everything and everything sounds, I literally like put stuff in my bag and then emptied it like three times, kept going back and forth. Like, fuck, I was hungry. I was hangry, really, is what it was.
Yeah. Then we had the Revolution show proper, and it kicked off with Christian Cage successfully defending his TNT title against Daniel Garcia.
So Christian Cage.
Yeah, Christian Cage. I liked this match a lot, and it once again underlined the feeling I've said for some time here on the show, which is Christian and Adam Copeland are at their best when they aren't working together.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought this was a really, really good match. You know, the crafty veteran versus the plucky underdog. Garcia's looking better and better, and the crowd's really getting into him, which is cool to see.
Yeah.
Yes, there were the shenanigans with the Waynes and Kill Switch and Daddy Magic and all of that. But I thought, all in all, it was pretty good. That said, Mama Wayne now has her own t-shirt available at shopaew.com. And I continue to ask, why Mama Wayne in general?
Well, yes, in general. I think if I saw somebody wearing a Mama Wayne shirt in public,
yeah,
I might just jump them and just start putting the boost to them. Like, why did you get that money for this?
Yeah, I mean, and with shirts on sale, they aren't very cheap from the shop AEW.
The price of t-shirts over the past 5 years, skyrocketing. It's just like I remember. Oh, here's the old man in me. I'm going to shake my fist at the cloud here.
Get five B's for a nickel.
I had an onion on my belt, which was the style at the time. We had to use the word dickety because the evil Kaiser is throwing the word 20. But I remember going to a show for, dickety $5. And then, I'd be able to get a T-shirt for like 15 or 20 bucks.
Right. Right. Nope.
35 or 40 bucks for a t-shirt now.
Yeah, it's getting a little crazy. And I think I would not be as mad. So you and I think I started by now I turned you on to it. A lot of the bootleggers on Instagram. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And the thing that I enjoy so much, and it's why I don't mind paying like $30 for a t-shirt is...
Plus shipping.
Yes, plus shipping. Is it's a quality t-shirt. It's got a good weight to it.
Yeah.
The screen printing's really nice.
Yeah.
Not really what you're getting from a band traditionally or like, PWTs or even probably right. WWE shop. Like, it's always like a thin, uncomfortable blank shirt. And then I believe shop AEW is like direct to garment printing. So it's not going to last as long. Like,
I feel like the WWE back when I was buying WWE shirts, the majority of them were like a very coarse type of fabric and not like the soft cottony type. I feel like they got to that eventually because I think I had I got like an Undisputed Era shirt when they were thinking NXT, and that was like the soft, comfortable kind.
Right, but right.
Like, I have a couple KO Mania shirts from back in the day, and they're like hard, like it hurts. I have sensitive nipples.
It feels like you're wearing a piece of cardboard.
Yeah, it's not comfortable. Yeah. I didn't, however, pay $35 for a Glory Hammer t-shirt last night, and I'm not ashamed of that. So cheers to the hoots.
Hey, there we go. Well, then we had Eddie Kingston, Brian Danielson for the Continental Crown. This on any other night.
Yeah, I know.
Would have been a match of the night. It was very, very good. It's two of my favorite guys in professional wrestling beating the piss out of each other. I had such a great time with this, and I'm glad Eddie got over and won at, got the finish and won. And we got the handshake, as had been hinted to all along, as the one thing Eddie Kingston really wanted was that show of respect from Brian Danielson. And Danielson, sure enough, gave it to him.
King of the Bums no more is Eddie Kingston. Yes. Although I do kind of love that moniker for him. It does fit pretty well. Whose ever idea that was to use that turn of phrase, whether it be Brian or Tony or Eddie, whomever. That's kudos there. But yeah, the match was just... Both of these guys really understand, at least our brand of pro wrestling.
Right.
And granted, our brand is not like, this is a very different type of match than the, Takeshita Osprey match, what we'll talk about, but both, strike that nerve within us of this is what pro wrestling should be. And it's just like when you see a match like that happen and they keep building and then it just gets crazier and crazier and false finishes and kickouts and all these different sorts of things that they did. And I was like, fucking hell. Like, it was the second match of the night. And I was like, okay, I need to take a breather here.
Yeah. And we were given one in the All-Star 8-Man Scramble. So when we last spoke, the intent was that there was going to be a Meat Madness match,
right?
Which I can't recall if at that time Archer was or wasn't in it. But what we knew was Wardlow, Archer, Hobbs. Mm-hmm. Then Tony Khan, week of the show, says, "Hey, we are putting Meat Madness on ice because we couldn't get everyone we wanted." Turns out he also wanted Miro and Keith Lee in it. Both are on the shelf right now. So we're going to make it an 8-man all-star scramble, winner getting a shot at the AEW title. So it ended up being Wardlow, Powerhouse Hobbs, Chris Jericho, Lance Archer, Hook, Brian Cage, Magnus from CMLL, and Dante Martin.
Poor Dante Martin getting tossed around like a
Yeah. yeah, your job, Dante, in this match is to die, was what they told him. And unfortunately, he took that a little too literally, as there were multiple times where, like, he caught his feet on the ropes when doing a tope. And it was an off night for him. And considering I've seen that man's leg turn the wrong way, I was definitely getting the yips when I saw like his ankle come across the top rope as he's doing a tope and all of that. What I thought was funny was, considering they were putting the Meat Madness match on ice, there was an entire segment of the match that was Meat Madness. Hobbs, Wardlow, Archer, Brian Cage in the ring, just, you know, doing the I hit you, you hit me, neither one of us fall down. I'll shoulder check you, shoulder check me, all that.
While the crowd chants meats.
Yeah. And I enjoyed that quite a bit.
Yeah. No, I was just chanting meat. That's all.
Sorry. And then we had basically the twink off because it was Dante, Hook, Magnus, and Jericho.
Yeah.
Jericho, such an odd man out in this. And
yeah, did not fit in either group.
No,
is old.
Like, I don't know if if he was or if this is a situation where legally per his contract he had to be on the pay-per-view. I don't know. He had some good moments, but man, like, they did the double lion salt spot
in
Magnus, and I definitely was worried about Jericho.
Yeah. He's not going to make that rotation one of these days. You know, he's barely making it now.
Yeah.
It's just, we have outgrown the need for Chris Jericho as a society. You know, but, you know, especially it was just so telling in this match, and a match that he could have just got lost in the shuffle, and he kind of did, but it was so glaring when he was in there that he didn't belong, that it just added extra emphasis to it, you know?
Yeah. Not really a great show. Like, there was something about this match, and maybe it's just, you know, they had their different spots they figured out and it just didn't gel together. Like, the ingredients were fine, but the execution was bad. There was something just missing from this. And even the crowd, what you could tell, was kind of like, it's all right.
Well, you know, of a meaty match, I would say the one thing missing was stakes.
Well done. Well done. Well, Wardlow ends up winning. And we are heading towards the inevitable Wardlow AEW title shot.
It's happening this Wednesday, bro.
Yeah, which we're getting this Wednesday.
Yeah.
Which, just like, okay, cool. We're going to make that happen.
He's definitely winning.
Then we had Roddy Strong and Orange Cassidy, Roderick Strong winning the AEW International title. This match absolutely fucking ruled.
I mean, they are both good wrestlers in the ropes, you know.
Yeah.
Roddy's character work, you know, is a topic of its own conversation, but yeah, when it's in there, dude knows what he's doing.
Could not agree more. And I would just like to point out, because someone is now apparently on the unemployment line, if you go back and watch this match, you get to find out how to call that turnbuckle brainbuster like someone just died, as opposed to you dropped a fucking ice cream cone.
Yeah.
When they did that spot, like, I think Taz shit himself. Like, they really gave it their all here. By the way, the booth for the night, or most of the night, was Nigel, Taz, and Excalibur, and they were on fire. They were great together.
Well, no, it was Tony, Excalibur, and Nigel for like two or three matches, and then Taz came. No, it was only two matches because then Taz came in for the meat manas, whatever it is.
The scrum.
Scrambly.
Yeah. The scrum. Yeah.
Tall salad and scrambled Dante's.
But yeah, the booth was in a very good spot for the most part.
Until JR showed up. We can just say it.
After the match, Bennett and Taven come to the ring and carry Roddy Strong on their shoulders because, you know, if there's any visual proof of how this works in AEW, it's not this, because it's really the other way around, where Roddy is carrying both of them.
When he's the guy carrying, you know, there's an issue in your stable.
And as they are celebrating, a homeless man wandered into the ring. Oh, wait, no, that was Kyle O'Reilly making his long-awaited AEW return, looking very, very tired.
Yeah, I'm hoping that's part of the story that they're telling here, because yeah. If you're making your return after 2 years of, you know, will I ever be able to wrestle again? You're coming back looking like this. Justin's going to have a fucking field day with this.
Yeah, he really, really is. Like growing out the hair.
Sure.
Good look. Fine. But like, he's just busting into the ring wearing a Bull Nakano shirt and gym shorts. And it's like, okay,
yeah. I guess. Oh, that wasn't it, my guy.
Yeah. And they're doing some weird thing where I guess the end result's going to be him and Roddy, breaking Roddy away from the Undisputed Kingdom. But just That whole segment felt weird. And I think also he probably got a bit legit choked up there.
Yeah.
So it just made it play odd. Then we had the Blackpool Combat Club of John Moxley and Claudio Castagnoli against FTR. Of course, Dax Harwood and Cash Wheeler. Awesome match.
Yeah, this was our stiff striking match of the night right here, man.
Mox and Claudio coming to the ring wearing Road Warriors-esque shoulder pads.
I gotta say, I don't love John Moxley's recent taking on of cosplay. I don't, you know, for some people it works.
Sure.
For John Moxley, it doesn't work for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because Mox is just this guy, you know, he's just no frill, you know, I'm going to come out there, I'm going to do my little neck shake thing, and I'm going to punch you in the face. And then if you want to, you know, bite my ear off, fine, I'm still going to punch you in the face harder. That's the Mox mindset. It's like, ooh, not okay. Hey, Renee, do you have more crazy glue? My one shoulder pad isn't, spike isn't as tall as the other one, you know. That's kind of ruining the allure of a John Mox for me, just a tad. I mean, in ring, everything's the same.
Still, he's still delivering.
But
I will say, I don't disagree. Claudio, though, rocking those shoulder pads looked fucking awesome.
That's true.
Granted, he's Claudio and he's built like a fucking, you know, brick house.
He's kind of like an amalgamation of Hawk and Animal together.
Yes. Yes. I can absolutely see that. And I will also say this. If you're going to do the shoulder pads, go all the fucking way. Where was the face paint?
Yeah, that would have been a lot.
Claudio probably would have looked awesome as hell.
Yeah.
Mox would have looked very silly.
Mox would have looked goofy for sure. Yeah. But I mean, again, if you're going to do it, North Carolina is a good place to do it.
Absolutely. FTR, you know, had a hell of a match here. Dax decided I'm doing the Bret Hart, Steve Austin blade job.
Yeah.
And just was leaking everywhere.
Yeah.
But the BCC gets a clean win, as I guess they're prepping for Cash to spend a little bit of time behind bars.
That was probably a smart choice. Claudio was in just full on beast mode this match.
Oh my God. Yes.
Dude was everywhere, tossing around everybody, breaking up pins, just absolute fire is that guy.
Yeah. He's so fucking good.
He's a freak of nature, man.
And I think he's now in his 40s, which makes it all the more impressive.
What am I doing with my life?
I know, right? So then, after a little bit of a delay, as they had to replace the ring mat.
Because Dax left all his DNA on it.
We had Timeless Toni Storm and Deonna Purrazzo for the AEW Women's title. Chris...
Yeah.
Throughout the run of this angle here, I had pointed out that one, Deonna comes off as more a heel than a face. Mm-hmm. And two, none of this was resonating storyline wise.
Yeah.
So you had a match, which I think was well worked.
Mostly. But
no one cared.
No, I sure didn't.
Yeah. And it kind of bummed me out because, again, I thought they were working very hard in the ring.
Mm-hmm.
But there was no real reason or no real, I guess, meat for the crowd to sink their teeth into in this.
Yeah.
Like the most interesting storyline beat of the show, or not of the show, sorry, of this match, of this segment, was Mariah May coming out for the fake out as, you know, the original AEW Toni Storm. Because they're totally going full all about Eve on this.
Sure,
like,
yeah,
she's now dressing like her. She has a t-shirt like her. Like, we're setting up the creepiness here.
Yeah.
But for as well worked as it was, just nothing resonated.
And I can't remember a single spot from the match.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Yeah.
And there's also, I didn't really think there was any chance Deonna Purrazzo was going to win. So again, you know, that didn't give me anything either to sink my teeth into. I'm like, all right, Tony's just going to win. And, you know, she'll eventually lose to Mariah May once they pull the trigger on that. Or, you know, if and when Mercedes shows up on Monday or Wednesday, then, you know, maybe right into the title picture. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. We will see. But then we had already 2024 match of the year candidate. Probably one of the best matches of the decade. Probably one of the best matches I've ever watched of Will Ospreay and Konosuke Takeshita. Going into this match, I knew this would be good.
Like, well, yeah, they're two really good pro wrestlers.
I did not expect this match. So fucking good.
Takeshita has had a couple opportunities now where they just kind of take the chain off him and say, go do your crazy shit.
Yes.
And every time it's happened, jaws have hit the floor and it's like, fuck, why aren't they letting this guy do this more often?
Yeah.
Maybe because of the physical toll it could take on his body. But, you know, it was kind of, it was a very mirrored type match.
Yeah.
In many respects. You know, I think Takeshita has a couple pounds and maybe an inch or two on Ospreay.
Yep. Yep.
But other than that, they are pretty evenly matched. And they went, you know, kick for kick, punch for punch, poison rana for poison rana, crazy knee for crazy knee. Like the amount of, like, you know, I want to rewatch it and I want to count the, you know, reactions of just something so bonkers happening. I feel like, you know, the number of those moments in the match probably surpass anything AEW has done in quite some time.
Yeah. And just considering like the library of amazing matches AEW's had in the last year alone, let alone since the inception of the company, that this was on such another level. I mean, Will Ospreay might be the most perfect acquisition for AEW that they've ever had. You know,
but is he going to put any butts in the seats? Is he going to draw? Is he going to make money?
Yeah, I don't give a fucking shit. He's going against Bryan Danielson at the next pay-per-view. Like, yeah,
fuck off, people.
Yeah, that could get the full $50 from me. You know, like that's how good of a match that is on paper. But I do think a very key thing, as you hit on at the beginning of you know, your thoughts on it, Takeshita needs to be more in the mix.
Yes.
Let off his leash and able to just rule ass and do great matches like this, because
Warhorse is going to send you a cease and desist.
It's okay. He's now sad Warhorse. He doesn't rule ass anymore. he was just unbelievable on this. And, you know, this is a guy, here's a guy who had the match with Kenny Omega back at All Out, which was also fucking fire. Great.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, he's just like, all right, here's a whole nother gear. Just so, so good.
Have we like seen the singles match with him since, honestly?
Takeshita?
Yeah.
Yeah, he had at the very least, he had the one with Darby Allin, which...
Where he murdered Darby in a million different Darby ways. Million Ways to Die, starring Takeshita and Darby Allin.
Yeah, which I think I said on the show, it was January 3rd when we already had a match of the year candidate, because that was fucking wild.
That was.
But yeah, Takeshita needs to be one of those guys in the mix. Just thinking about And I know we've gone over this a few times in recent weeks, but it's like you got Joe, Swerve, Hangman, Ospreay, Takeshita, Pac, Jay White,
Okada.
Like, oh my God. Danielson on the way out.
An embarrassment of riches, honestly.
You could throw an Eddie Kingston into that mix at any point. You know, I just we are on the precipice of some very, very good professional wrestling. Wow. I just hope there's more people physically there to see it.
We are so back, my friend.
Yes. Yes. Completely agreed. The sickest spot was they did the old El Generico top rope brain buster. But that did not go to plan.
No.
So typically, in case this is your first time seeing that brain buster, the recipient should basically bounce their head off of the top turnbuckle.
Right.
That didn't happen here.
No, it did not.
He ended up kind of like totally sliding past the turnbuckle, landing on his head, and apparently, I guess maybe on one of the ropes, like smacking the shit out of his back, and he had this huge bruise at the end of the night.
Yeah, it was. I feel like he landed on the top rope, not the turnbuckle, the actual top rope, with a lot of force right at the small of his back, and then kind of rolled down and hit the subsequent ropes, Homer Simpson down the gorge style, and then fell directly on his head, and then got up and still did some crazy shit that I've never seen before. Is the man is, you know, I'm sure he was hurting, but goddamn, it didn't show on Wednesday, which we'll get to. But.
Yeah, holy fucking shit. And then we had the triple threat for the AEW World Title: Samoa Joe, Hangman Adam Page, Swerve Strickland. Let it be known, the minute that this got announced, your boy on this very show said, "Okay, so Hangman's going to get choked out by Samoa Joe. Swerve's going to have an entire problem with that, saying you didn't actually beat me. I deserve a title shot. Bah, 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 bah." And that basically was our finish here. Although I did like the little bit of a twist they put on it, which is the announcers asking, did Hangman Adam Page actually tap out? Or did he realize if he would tap out, Swerve can't have the title?
I thought
that was a fun twist, but this match, it's a shame it followed the match that it did.
I know,
because this match was very, very good.
Yeah, however, definitely backloaded the pay-per-view for sure.
Yeah, but it's like, it was very, very good. However, very, very good followed one of the greatest wrestling matches I've ever seen.
And then a massive spectacle and send off. It was the cream in that Oreo, and it, you know, as well worked as it was. And we got all the, you know, the signature spots from everybody. Joe, you know, walked away from a swerve dive off the top.
That spot should not, 20 years on, still work for me. Every fucking time I laugh,
it's because it's just so it's logic based. And, you know, to watch pro wrestling, especially for a 4-hour AEW show, you know, you have to let go of a lot of logic. But when logic pops in there, you're like, oh, that's fucking brilliant. And I love it.
Yeah. But so, so good. By the way, low key MVP of this match, Bryce Remsburg, for getting absolutely fucking murked by Adam Page in this match.
With the shiner to prove it, man. Page did not. And I love this unhinged Page, too, by the way.
Yes. Oh, my God. It's so good.
Yeah. He's really he's a versatile kind of guy. Like, you know, from the sad, depressed emo cowboy to, you know, an unhinged angry cowboy, I guess, is the spectrum of Hangman Page here, but it all works. And, you know, we're so invested in his character at this point that it makes it that much more, you know, great to watch. And, you know, we're so invested in this feud, this Batman Joker rivalry of Page and Swerve, that, you know what? I'm just going to take the L so you don't win. So fuck you. You know, that's fantastic.
Yeah. It's just good pro wrestling.
Yeah.
And by the way, especially, on Wednesday, if you did not think Swerve was a total baby face,
oh my God,
there we go. Oh, yeah. I do have to point out, he got the ridiculous over the top entrance with Prince Nana and the Nanettes doing their dances.
The Nana dancers.
Really, yeah, enjoyed the Nanettes. That.
That's great. Yeah.
And then we had our main event, which was Sting's farewell, the final showtime, as it was called in a video package prior to the match.
Yeah.
Probably one of the best video packages AEW's ever done.
And all the more impressive considering there's a large chunk majority of Sting's career that they couldn't get any footage of.
Right, right.
Because it's owned by WWE, which apparently they didn't ask. But had they asked, would they really have been granted it? Probably not.
Yeah, probably not. I mean, they try to do their best by using the photo library of Pro Wrestling Illustrated. Which,
right, right, right.
Definitely the right move there.
Some footage from New Japan.
Yeah. And of course, footage from his run in AEW. Yeah. TNA just was a very quick screen that said scene missing. And then they just continued on from there.
I'm surprised Jeff Hardy didn't come out and congratulate him. I think he crashed his car on the way to the arena.
Oh, no.
It's a long drive from Cameron, North Carolina, to Greensboro. It's, you know, 3 hours or something.
Yeah, it's fraught with all sorts of horrors I can bring back for him. Which reminds me, you know what? We know they listen. Tony, you have a contract that's up for renewal. I'm just saying, you can probably get 2-3 really good guys instead of Matt Hardy. Just saying. Yeah. Just
he
saying.
Got some kind of promo last night at Collision I saw. I didn't see what it was about, but it looked like maybe this is the end. Thank you for everything promo. But we should be so fortunate.
Like I'd be fine with Matt being a backstage producer. Like he's got a good brain, but like no different than Ric Flair in this main event.
Those eggs are a little scrambled, I think. Yeah,
but it's like, you know, the brain has the right idea. The body does not follow through.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We had Ric Flair come out, and I audibly groaned.
Yep, same.
then Ricky the Dragon Steamboat came out as a guest timekeeper.
Nice surprise.
If you need any proof of how different pro wrestlers live.
Yes.
Ric Flair, Ricky Dragon Steamboat, peers in their generation.
Yeah, similar in age.
One looks like a shambling corpse.
Yeah.
The other one looks like he just gets up and plays golf and has a great time. Like,
yeah. Cool grandpa with his polo shirt tucked into his jeans, you know.
He's going to go to the beach house, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
just super chill.
You guys want anything for the general store?
But it was Sting and Darby Allin against the EVPs of Matthew and Nicholas Jackson. Matthew and Nicholas Jackson have officially been bequeathed to Cody Vader.
Yep.
They had that for their intro. Also had robes, which was a bit of foreshadowing.
Yeah.
This was a spectacle.
Sure. Yeah. It's not a work rate match.
No. This was a stunt show, and it's fine. It's fine that it was a stunt show.
Yeah. No, I feel like that's kind of what it needed to be, you know.
Yeah. Darby Allin doing one of the craziest spots I've ever seen.
I don't see how anybody could top that. I feel like that will be the craziest thing I've ever seen.
You just said that out loud. Darby Allin heard you. He heard it.
We'll sort of Mount Everest and we'll see who wins that battle. So,
oh boy.
I honestly am scared for that guy's life.
Yeah. People more die so doing
climbing
this.
Mount Everest than doing, dives into, or planches onto glass.
Yeah. Which,
you know, the controversy that holds, you know, is another conversation. But I mean, he's a tiny guy with not a lot of, insulation.
Yes.
To be climbing Mount Everest, you know, at the end of winter. Certainly a choice.
And what also was a choice was the idea of putting Sting over in his last match. This apparently was not what Sting wanted to do.
Yeah.
He wanted to put the Bucks over, but Tony was like, you know, you're 29-0, we make you 30-0 and just wrap it up there and I get to do a tournament.
Yeah. Yeah. That's more for me than for you, but you get it.
But, you know, the everything that you wanted out of this match was there. You know, you got your sting yells, you got your stinger splashes. You had his sons, his large adult sons coming out as Surfer Sting and Wolfpack Sting, respectively.
Yeah.
The unloved son was left backstage in the TNA Joker outfit.
Does he have another son?
No.
Oh, okay. That would be hysterical.
He doesn't have a daughter, though.
Okay. All right.
If he did, he would definitely be the Hugo of the family. Just locked in the lower parts of the Greensboro Coliseum, dressed up like TNA Joker Sting.
Yeah, eating fish heads.
This was everything it needed to be. Bucks did what they do very, very well, which is they were sort of running lead on this match. They were the tag team specialists who were sort of controlling the pace and everything. And it was great. Sadly, they had to end the show at midnight exactly, which was about 30 seconds after Sting got a microphone.
Yep.
The most
apt thing ever is just like, well, I'm getting some time cues, fade to black.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, that's great.
So something that I find very, very funny in retrospect. So Ric Flair did end up getting involved, which was not good.
I mean, I enjoyed him getting kicked in the face.
He did take a four quarters legit super kick.
Yeah.
And bless the Bucks for the doing. We don't love you. We hate you. We're not sorry.
Yeah.
With the super kicks. Very well done there. He just looked like absolute hell, but apparently he was pitching really, really hard that he'd turn on Sting one last time.
Of course he was. He's Ric Flair.
I know he's Ric Flair, but for as much as you and I both have grown to dislike modern era Ric Flair, I did kind of want him to turn on Sting one last time.
You know, it's just the, how can we make this more about me? That's the kind of thing that pisses me off. Like, how many retirements has that fucker had?
Yeah,
Like, let the guy have his moment. All right. Fuck off, Rick.
So the season premiere of Dynamite was on Wednesday. They said it was Atlanta, Georgia.
It was Duluth, Georgia.
Yeah. But the big show, sprinkling a lot of seeds for the, you know, next few weeks, months of AEW, because we are having a brand new pay-per-view in April, AEW Dynasty.
Mm-hmm.
So we will see how that all plays out. But
wonder if Mikey Ruckus is going to contact CBS and
cover the theme,
sample the Dynasty theme song. I don't think anybody would get that reference, so I'll strike that from the record.
We would. That's it.
Yeah.
During the show yesterday, Art Fight Show at Awesome Con yesterday, I made a Mr. Show reference that two people got. So.
Oh, wow.
God. Yeah.
Man, going to a concert in your 40s is very different than going to a concert in your 20s. And the way that the four of us, me, Darren, Derek, and Russell, were like groaning as we got into the car from standing in place for like 4 hours. We preemptively took ibuprofen before the show.
Very smart. Very smart.
Yeah. I mean, it didn't really do that much. Washed it down with a Peruvian chicken burrito at that place adjacent to Baltimore Soundstage.
Nice.
Highly
nice.
Recommend if you've never been there. Great plantains. The pops of our joints and the groans of lifting our legs to get into a car after standing for so long. I don't know how, somebody like Ric Flair moves around every day. Oh, wait, it's probably a lot of painkillers.
Yeah, a lot of painkillers, probably a lot of booze.
Yeah.
But the first face we saw in this new era of AEW Dynamite was Swerve Strickland. Swerve cutting a promo down on himself, disappointed that he wasn't able to get it done at the pay-per-view.
Yeah.
Had the great line, if this is Swerve's house, where are the keys?
All the little swervers out there who believed him didn't get their payoff. So,
yeah. He said, you know, maybe that this is karma for all the bad things he's done. Maybe it's
Enjoy that. You know, you're keeping, you know, he's like, and I've done some pretty bad things in AEW. I was like, yeah, you fucking have. Yeah. But I appreciate that because, you know, as a babyface now, you know, he's looking back and like, well, I was kind of a dickhead.
Yeah.
This is not cool. And maybe that's why I haven't been able. It's another, you know, facet to the story.
Yeah. So he says, you know what? The crowd's finally getting behind me, as the crowd chanted, you deserve it when it comes to the AEW title. He said, he's not going to let him down. And Samoa Joe, I'm coming for you. And I'm like, hell yeah, let's go. And then, of course, the Joey Samoa music hits and he comes out and he's in his gear.
Yeah.
And I'm going, oh, my God, are they going to do Swervin' Joe? First bit of this new era of Dynamite and have the title change on TV.
That would be something, man.
It would be a statement.
Sure. Yeah.
And, you know, Joe, as always, cut a fucking great promo. God, Samoa Joe is so good. Yeah. Cut a promo, you know, saying that he's making promises that he'll never keep for the fans. Then this great line. You know, we might be in Swerve's house, but it exists in Joe's world.
Yeah.
So good.
Yeah.
So good. And he said, I thought, you know, I'd come out here and let the fans see a real world champion.
What a motherfucker. He's so great at his job.
And then Swerve said exactly what I pointed out. He said, you know what? You still haven't defeated me. So how about we go one-on-one tonight? I'm going, let's go. Let's fucking go. And then the fucking Undisputed Kingdom music hit. Like, the only way it would have been worse is if the fucking Hardy Boys music started. Like,
yeah, or Jeff Jarrett's.
Oh my God. So Adam Cole and his dipshit brigade were out there. He put over Taven and Bennett as the greatest Ring of Honor tag champions of all time.
Sir, please.
Jay Briscoe spinning in his grave.
Yeah.
Like a fucking wood lathe. Just like that's the level he was spinning on that.
He's whittled out of his coffin by now.
Yes. And he said, I regret saying that. Adam Cole cut a promo talking about Roddy Strong winning the international title and saying that, you know, 6 months from now, fans aren't going to care about Swerve because the man who's going to take the title is Wardlow. Mm-hmm. And then Swerve gets all fired up, cuts a promo, calls Adam Cole Dr. Claw from Inspector Gadget.
Love that.
Which I very much love. And Cole said, you know what? Why not next week we do Joe and Swerve against the Kingdom one-on-one, or not one-on-one, in a tag team match. Swerve Strickland said, hey, maybe we should do it right now. Music hits. Out comes Teddy Long. He's like, we got a tag team match, playa.
Tony Schiavone Long.
Yeah, Tony Schiavone Long. I like that a lot. But Tony heard from Tony that they were going to do the match, and it was going to be up next, and the most WWE-esque opening segment. Yeah,
I was going to say that was a very Raw opening, but it was performed well.
So
and to the Kingdom getting their asses beat. So
yes, you know, so it was Joe and Swerve against the Kingdom. Mike Bennett, now without a beard with a shaved head, looks creepily like Eric Young to me.
Like, oh yeah,
there are times where I'm just like, wait, who's the bald guy on the apron? Oh yeah, it's Mike Bennett.
A little taller than EY, but yeah.
But
I feel like he's taller than him. EY's pretty short, right?
Ish. Yeah.
I don't know.
We'll look it up later.
I won't.
So Swerve basically ends up beating them on his own, which a very, very strong statement, and also indicating that Ring of Honor champions are absolute chumps in this company.
Well,
yeah.
as should be.
But we are getting Wardlow and Joe next week at Big Business, a show that is just named Big Business for funsies and not because anything important's happening there.
No, nothing boss related.
Guys, you have 6,000 people. That's really, really good for a Dynamite, but you know how many more you can get by saying, and we're going to have a debut that will shock the world. It's one sentence. Like, this ain't the last dance again.
They're trying.
Or the first dance again. I think they need to take the Band-Aid off and be like, hey, there's a big debut coming. It won't. Renee Paquette was then backstage with Hook, asked Hook about his upcoming match with Brian Cage, and Chris Jericho comes up as I scream.
Yeah, I hate that this current era of Chris Jericho is like, oh, here's a young kid with some heat. Let me leash myself onto him and try and get myself back into a program.
Guess what, kid? You got the next 6 weeks of your life planned out. Let's go.
The photo, somebody tweeted, and I retweeted it, of, you know, the photo of Jericho showing up next to Hook, and then Walter White handcuffed in the back of the SUV saying, run, no, get out of here. poor Hook.
Yeah. I mean, look, Jericho put Hook over, but he could have just ended it there. We didn't need anything more. Well,
and the thing is, like, you know, there's probably a tie of Chris Jericho to every fucking wrestler because he's been around for fucking ever.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
true. You don't have to make a storyline out of every loose connection that you have with a performer on the roster. Like, fuck, man. Just do Fozzy. Just go play your Fozzy shows to, you know, a bunch of people that I'm sure are winning at life.
Well, you know, the old Schlegelism once again in play. Can't miss you if you don't go away. And I think we need a little less Jericho time.
Need a lot less Jericho.
We had a recap of Hangman Adam Page murdering referees at the pay-per-view. And we go backstage to Matthew Nicholas Jackson doing eerily accurate impressions of Tony Khan.
The grin, the way they hold the... I mean, I will say it was well executed.
Yes, yes, very... very well executed, because they have two huge announcements.
Yeah.
But Matthew cuts off Nicholas before he says him and says, you know what? We'll make the announcement later tonight, live in the ring.
Yeah.
We had the FTW title match between Hook and Brian Cage. Plunder, plunder, plunder. Choke out. Hook wins.
It was a lot of fun, though. I mean, Cage has really been getting some showcases, and, you know, he's kind of turned it up.
Yeah, I appreciate that he is turning it up. He's not just sort of, floating on by on the fact that he's got a very, very large body.
Yeah.
And he ate a lot of shit in this match. The finish was Hook sank in red rum. Cage falls backwards. There were a bunch of tacks on the mat, but Hook refuses to let go, so Cage passes out. Then post-match, Bishop Khan, and like I said, he had a very good match, so he gets his name. Toa Leona come out and attack Hook, and then Chris Jericho runs down with the baseball bat for the save.
Great.
Getting the Gates of Agony against Hook and Chris Jericho at some point.
I wonder what kind of stupid name Jericho is going to come up with for him and Hook.
Boy. Jera Hook?
Yeah.
Jook?
Jericho Hooks.
Jericho Hookics?
The walls of Hooks? I don't know.
Oh, boy. It just
exasperated, crusty side.
Yeah, it's just getting worse and worse and worse. Where'd we go after that?
I don't know. Probably Renee Paquette.
You know what? You're not wrong, but before that, we had a video indicating that there's going to be the tournament to crown new champions across TNT and TBS. They're going to have their own version of March Madness. And that's the plan. Tournament for the tag belts. Then Renee Paquette was backstage with Orange Cassidy, Chuck Taylor, and Trent Beretta.
Chuck Taylor from The Goonies.
Yes.
Yeah. He did the truffle shuffle, and his mom watched in – oh, no, that was Trent's mom.
Yes.
Never mind.
OC. Long story short, sounds like that OC and Trent Beretta are entering into the tag title tournament as the duo, as opposed to Chuck and Trent, because Chuck is still on the shelf.
What does he have? What is that?
He has a fucked up ankle.
Okay. Was that from a match or just
I'm not sure. I'm not sure. Genuinely.
Couldn't have been from training.
No, I'm awful. Killswitch and Matt Menard had a match, and I'm going to be totally honest with you. I checked completely out during this.
Well, it didn't last very long, thankfully. So
yeah. Post match, you know, they continued the beat down and everything. Here comes Adam Copeland. He's got a chair and he's, you know, chasing Christian Cage. Christian steals a car to drive away. Yeah. Adam Copeland looks at the camera all grumpy and says, March 20th in Toronto, I quit match. So we got something for 2 weeks away.
Christian Cope 3, he said.
Renee Paquette was then backstage with Kyle O'Reilly. Kyle just saying, hey, you know, I need to take my own path. And really, that was about all it was. Not a lot of there.
No.
Then Young Bucks come out. Tony Schiavone said, you know, that was a great entrance you guys just made after getting your asses kicked at Revolution.
Tony.
Give no fuck, Tony Schiavone is a truly great on-screen character.
I will have to reiterate how much I love the Nicholas and Matthew theme.
Yes.
It's just so, it's so perfect.
Yeah, it's grown a lot on me. So they say they have two big announcements. It was technically three, but
yeah.
Two big announcements, talking about their friends, Hangman Adam Page and Kenny Omega. Page is suspended indefinitely from the Elite,
right?
Without pay. I don't know if that so is.
He's been collecting two paychecks this whole time, one from Tony and one from the one from the Elite.
Brandon Cutler's got, you know, two paychecks, so why not Adam Page? Come on.
Yeah. Hey, okay.
And then Kenny Omega has been fired from the Elite for not making his appearances. For some reason, just not showing up.
Yeah, from the not diverticulitis or anything. A life-threatening injury. No.
Matthew also took a moment to apologize that, you know, Kenny, you're finding out on live TV. So
yeah.
But then out comes Eddie Kingston before the other announcement, and he gets in their face and throws a wad of cash at the Bucks, saying, you know what? Might as well do it now. You're going to find me anyway.
Yeah, I like
and
that.
That was also a very clever way to set up a fun little bit at the end of the segment. Yeah. Because as they get all fired up, the Bucks to get the numbers game. They're about to do an EVP trigger when the coin drops, and wearing a suit looking like $1 million, out comes the latest acquisition to AEW, the Rainmaker himself, Kazuchika Okada. And he comes out, looks like he's going to back up Eddie Kingston, and no wrist control. Boom. Rainmaker takes him down.
Yeah.
And, We got a shit eating heel Okada,
about it.
The grin he did in the ring, so good. The Bucks said, "Hey, this was actually our other announcement that the newest member of the Elite is Okada." So we have an Elite of Okada and the Young Bucks.
Fuck yeah!
And apparently, this was the plan from day one. This was the storyline of having the Bucks with Okada is what made him sign. Like, he's very excited about
that. Hey, I mean, they're, you know, they looked after him back in the day in TNA. He got them into New Japan, and now, you know, just trading it back, you know, getting each other jobs and helping each other out.
And it's easy to forget, but like, Okada never really turned face. Like, he's been a heel the whole time. Just, you know, he got beloved.
It's over.
Yeah. you know, he gets to be a heel here. And then we had Riho against Chris Statlander. Yes, the Stokely Hathaway thing took away a bit from this. But give me all the Riho Statlander matches you got.
Well, sure. I mean, that's a good matchup, you know, just size and strength and, you know, the differential there. That it was entertaining. And, you know, I like Stat as a performer. But, yeah, if you're focusing on the match, then you're a little better. And it's not – I like Stoke. It's just – this isn't working for me.
Yeah, yeah. It's not the most optimal way of using him.
Yeah.
I really like Beast Mode Chris Statlander.
Sure.
Like that is my favorite version of her. And that's what it was here, because she was just murdering Riho.
Yeah.
Which, of course, she's best when she is at like babyface, firing up, trying to
getting, you know, murdered.
Win. But then getting murdered, of course, as you just said. We had a promo backstage with Renee and Tony Storm. Tony indicated that it was award season. And this weekend, she'd be giving away the first ever, never before heard of Tony Award.
T-O-N-I, so she doesn't get sued.
Yes. and then, of course, that's when Mariah May gets to see her first AEW shirt, which, of course, matches the first Toni Storm shirt.
Yeah.
And, you know, they do their catchphrase and they're out.
Yeah.
Renee Paquette then backstage with Willow Nightingale and Stoke. Long story short, they're setting up Riho and Willow for big business next week. And then Darby Allin comes out to the ring with Tony Schiavone. Darby talks from the heart about, you know, his history and having to say farewell to Sting and all that. And he does have a match this coming Wednesday against Jay White, which brings out Jay White.
Yeah.
And they have a really, really fucking good back and forth. Jay White is very, very good on the microphone, especially when they don't just have him improv something.
Yes. Yeah.
And this took me from a match that, like, on paper I was interested in to one I really want to see this week.
Yeah, and it's good timing because, obviously, like we said, Darby's going away to climb Everest, so Darby's losing this match, and it's a good time for Jay White to get a marquee win because he hasn't had one since the Continental Classic, I'd say.
Yeah, I believe you're correct on that. It has been.
At least has he even had a solo match since the Continental Classic? I don't think so.
Yeah, no, he's just been in the
tags and trios.
The scissor zone.
Yeah.
Julia Hart, Sky Blue, then cutting a promo. This was the promo that I mentioned before.
Yeah,
where Julia's voice didn't really work. And then House of Black had a spooky promo saying that they were going to fight fire with fire. They'd set Mark Briscoe aflame, which then cuts to a Mark Briscoe promo with Renee Paquette. Mark Briscoe, by the way, was just awesome here. Like, how do I put this? There are times when Mark Briscoe cuts promos where I go, someone told him this is fake, right? Like,
right. Yeah.
Like, he got super fired up saying, you know, an Atlanta Street fight. I'll go against all three of you by myself. And here comes Jay Lethal. And I just go,
it's the appropriate response.
And Jay Lethal basically says, hey, I got your back. And so is Jeff Jarrett. Not into it. But what I was very into was the main event of the night. Will Ospreay, Kyle Fletcher, which was in jeopardy as of last Sunday because they weren't sure if Will would be able to go.
Yeah.
But
spoiler alert.
Yeah.
Dude was ready to fucking go.
Dude was absolutely ready to go. One quick note that I just want to point out for a presentation sake. Because I've seen this entrance twice now.
Uh-huh.
Ospreay, when he's coming out, has this moment where he does the United Empire hand thing mm-hmm. on the ramp. And then he like does like the big knee.
Yeah.
That needs pyro. Like, sure. Like that moment feels like it is built for pyro.
He didn't have pyro on Sunday.
He didn't. No, no. Huh. They are, of course, importing the Ospreay chant, which he yes. really made a thing towards the end of his run in New Japan. But he and Kyle Fletcher have a lot of personal history. Sure. Aussie Open roomed with Ospreay when they were trying to make their name in the UK.
Lived together during lockdown, too, I think, right?
Yeah, yeah, that's correct. And they proceeded to have an absolutely killer match. Like, the result was never in doubt.
Sure.
Kyle Fletcher, while I think he's very, very good, needs new gear terribly. I hate these tights.
And it has bad choices in haircuts.
Yeah.
Historically.
This one's better than the last one. Kyle Fletcher looked like an absolute legend in this match.
Yeah. That's how you do it. That's how you get the over Ospreay even more over yeah. while elevating the guy that's being defeated. Like, that's how it's done.
Yeah, I was having a conversation with someone yesterday about, you know, how they have all these top guys in AEW right now. Will Ospreay yeah. being one of them, Joe, etc. And there's a lot of criticism about that. Oh, Tony doesn't put them against each other. You know, and it ends up being in this instance, an Ospreay versus right. a Kyle Fletcher, or on Collision, it was a Danielson against Shane Taylor. Well, if they're all going to be like this,
yeah,
please elevate these other guys.
Yeah.
No pun intended, by having them go toe to toe with some of the best in the company.
Yeah.
I thought this was unbelievable. Like one of the best TV matches I've ever seen.
You know,
I have a feeling I'm going to be saying that a lot in this Will Ospreay run. Cause it sounds like he's ready to die for AEW.
I mean, you know, generational talent kind of gets thrown around a lot these days.
Yeah.
And you know, no offense to MJF who kind of co-opted the phrase for himself. Performance wise, character wise, MJF, sure.
Sure.
In ring wise, I really don't think anybody can touch Will Ospreay right now. He's fucking on another plane of existence.
I'm very much with you. But of course, that was the end of the show, which means we were then brought to.
Oh, yeah. I keep forgetting the show exists.
Hey, you're not the only one based on the viewership numbers as of late. I've not yet had a chance to watch Rampage or Collision, so we're just going to run through the results real quick.
Penta had a match, I think, didn't he?
Yes, Rampage. So we had Orange Cassidy and Trent Beretta defeating Kip Sabian and The Butcher. Okay. We had Julia Hart retaining the TBS title against Robin Renegade.
Mm-hmm.
We had Top Flight beating the teams of Private Party and Commander and Brian Keith in a triple threat.
Okay.
Also there was a Penta against Action Andretti.
Oh, that's what it was. Yeah.
Penta defeated Andretti. I think if anything, I'll try to catch the last two matches, the Penta match and the triple threat tag. But again, not a lot really going on there. But then last night was Collision. And this was a show filled with continued storyline beats. So the show kicked off Bryan Danielson defeating Shane Taylor.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently very, very good. Shane Taylor looking unreal here. Post-match, Will Ospreay makes his way to the ring. Forgot to mention, Will Ospreay and Danielson faced off
at the end of Dynamite.
So Ospreay said, you know what? I see how respected you are by the locker room, by the fans, all that. After we got interrupted on Dynamite, I feel like you want to ask me something. And Danielson said, you know, welcome to AEW. You had a hell of a match with Takeshita. You've said you're the best in the world. Why don't you prove it? So April 21st at Dynasty.
Let's go.
Bryan Danielson, Will Ospreay in possibly the world's first 8-star match.
I mean, if any match has the potential to be that, this is it.
Okada, Matthew Jackson, and Nicholas Jackson made their trios debut in AEW against three jobbers. Okada single-handedly won the match.
Love it. Yeah. I love it. Just being a shithead.
They have this bit now where during the Bucks come out first.
Yeah.
Matthew has a giant coin that he drops and then Okada's music hits.
Okay. I mean,
come on. After the match, a fired up Eddie Kingston runs down.
Okay.
He goes after Okada. He gets overwhelmed by the Elite and suddenly his best friend Penta El Zirimedo comes out to make the save. But again, numbers game. He gets dropped. And Okada's standing there. He's holding the Continental Crown, looking like King Shit on Fuck Mountain. And here comes Pac.
Yes.
Pac makes his return, takes down Okada with a German, takes out both Bucks. And Pac gets the mic. He said he's back and he's looking for trouble.
Let's go.
So this Wednesday, the Elite against Kingston, Pac, and Penta. Fuck. Yes.
Yeah, very much here for that match.
Mariah May defeated Trisha Dora. Okay. The first ever Tony Award was given out, and it was Mariah May winning for her portrayal of Tony Storm at Revolution.
Okay.
Unfortunately, Deonna Purrazzo crashed this.
We were done with this.
Jumped Tony Storm and attacks her with said Tony Award, which was, by the way, a shoe.
Ugh, yeah. God.
Nick Wayne defeated a jobber. After the match, Christian starts talking trash to fans, tears up their sign. It was a fan wearing a lucha mask. Well, the fan jumps the rail, and turns out it's Adam Copeland. And he has a box that he pulls out from under the ring whatever's in the box made Christian get all spooked and run away.
Is it his wife's head?
Don't know. They did not show it. So I guess
it'll be a hell of a twist.
I guess it's going to be the big reveal for the Toronto match.
Great.
Chris Jericho had another match against Luchador as he defeated Titan.
Uh-huh.
Post-match, the Gates of Agony jump Chris Jericho. And Hook comes out with a
kendo stick. Some of the Gates of Agony are doing.
Yeah. Hook comes out, makes the save. Tony Schiavone has a promo with FTR in the ring. They're putting themselves in the tag team tournament. And then Ring of Honor's the infantry. God, easy for me to say. Come out. That's Sean Dean and Carly Bravo.
Charlie?
Oh, it was listed as Carly here. Maybe it is Charlie. They wish FTR luck and they want to face him in the tournament.
Okay.
So it looks like they're going to be going against each other.
Charlie Bravo.
I don't know. Ring of Honor guy is all I got. Mystico defeated. Turns out he's still alive. And Helico. Yeah.
Okay.
So we had that.
Good for Helico getting a payday in the TV match.
And then the main event was the Atlanta Street Fight between House of Black Mark Briscoe, Jeff Jarrett, and Jay Lethal. The finish was Mark Briscoe being put through a flaming table.
Yeah, nearly caught his ass on fire, too.
Yeah, not great. Yeah. But that feud must continue. Probably going to go to like an Inferno match or something similar. Don't know that I love that. But this Wednesday, it's a stacked show. Big business. We've got presumably the debut of Mercedes Moné in AEW. Joey Samoa defending the AEW World title against Wardlow. Darby Allin against Jay White. The Elite of the Young Bucks and Kazuchika Okada against Eddie Kingston, Pac, and Penta. Turns out this is on the card. Hook and Chris Jericho against the Gates of Agony.
Oh, wow.
And Willow Nightingale versus Riho. That is stacked dynamite.
With the debut, you know, most likely.
One of the worst kept secrets in wrestling.
Yeah.
Although I will say,
God, if it's somebody else, like what would be an appropriate swerve to do here if it's not Mercedes?
I'm going to run back the thought that I had, you know, have Tony come out, Tony Schiavone come out saying, you know, we're very, very excited to have this person come to the ring. They are a legend in women's professional wrestling. One of the all time greats. Dr. Britt Baker, DMD. And have her be spoiler. Because it would make sense that Tony would hype her up.
Right.
And then, of course,
then Mercedes comes out.
Yeah. Britt puts herself over, and then that's the first, angle for both of them.
Yeah. That'd be good. I'm here for that.
Because that allows you to stretch out the eventual, I assume, AEW women's title shot and win for Mercedes. So
Sure.
That's my two cents. We'll see how they end up doing it this Wednesday, but the rest of the show is just killer.
Stacked.
Very, very excited to watch it, and we'll see how it all plays out. And all that being said, we've been talking for quite a while. I think we should just wrap up the show, Chris.
Yeah, I mean, in the time we've been, talking on this podcast, Will Ospreay had another 3 5-star matches. So,
son of a bitch, we got to catch up. We got to catch up. We'll check him out. We'll talk about him next week. Catch you then.
The Roughhouse Podcast is a weekly podcast fueled by coffee, pizza rolls, and the stench of dirty litter boxes. Follow Christoph and Marty on Twitter at RoughhouseSGW, at Facebook.com/TheRoughhousePodcast, and at Patreon.com/TheRoughhousePodcast for early access to episodes, exclusive podcasts, Roughhouse Redos, and Roughhouse Divided movie trivia games. New episodes drop every single Monday on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, and wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
Subscribe, motherfuckers!
This is the Roughhouse podcast with Justin and Christoph.
That's it.
Fuck Christoph. He's terrible with his information. Okay. Hey, this is The Rock. Shut your mouth, jabronis, and listen up, because this is the Roughhouse podcast with
Marty
and my least favorite man on the planet, Christoph.